You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings, 12s. This is Corbin Smith, host of the Locked On Seahawks podcast, alongside Rob Rang. Preparation for Week 6 in Cleveland has begun. The Seahawks off today, but they did practice on Monday. They'll be back at it tomorrow. To start off today's show, the Seahawks have some interesting roster choices they'll have to consider in the near future. Rob and I will take a closer look. In the second quarter, Throwback Tuesday is officially here. There aren't a ton of former Seahawks who also starred for the Browns, but we'll look at a few players who did, and then we'll close out the show with our defensive awards for the first quarter of the 2019 season. Now for your lead story here on Locked On Seahawks. We've officially reached Week 6. For some teams, that's a bigger deal than others. For the Seahawks, this has been a week that's been on the calendar for quite some time because this is the final game of Jaron Reed's 6-game suspension.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's kind of flown by a little bit, Corbin, just because Seattle was able to make the splashy additions of Jadeveon Clowney and Ziggy Ansah, and they've had some impressive performances so far from Puna Ford and from Quentin Jefferson especially. And so it's Seattle, knock on wood, has been able to kind of get by without Jaron Reed's 10.5 sacks from a year ago and still be successful. But certainly, Pete Carroll is going to be very excited to have Jaron Reed back in the fold after this next game.
They're certainly going to be thrilled to have him back in the lineup. Looking forward to when Reed comes back next week. Obviously, the Seahawks are going to be activating him immediately. He's going to be put back on the 53-man roster, one of the best players on this football team. But there are some complicated roster matters that are going to need to be attended to in the next few weeks because Reed is not the only player that is going to be available after next week to bring back. Now, these other two guys are rookies, Phil Haynes, DeMarcus Christmas. They've been on the PUP list since before training camp started, but at least in the case of Phil Haynes, he's a player the Seahawks were extremely excited about this offseason. He was taking reps with the first team at left guard. Mike Iupati was sidelined. He's hurt all the time, but Phil Haynes was in the lineup for him and really impressed the veterans on this offensive line, especially Dwayne Brown, and unfortunately had to have sports hernia surgery before the season started, so he's just now going to be coming back after week 6. It seems like it's a pretty good chance that he is going to get activated pretty quickly off the PUP list. As far as DeMarcus Christmas is concerned, you're already bringing Jaron Reed back, and so this is already a pretty strong defensive line, especially in the interior. I'm not sure there's necessarily any tricks to get Christmas onto the 53-man roster, so it becomes a little bit more complicated for the Seahawks trying to figure out how to get all these moving pieces together in the middle of a season.
Yeah, it's a good problem to have. I mean, let's first say that. You have so many talented players that are all scratching and fighting to get onto your roster. And then obviously there's the unfortunate reality that if a player gets injured against Cleveland this week, then maybe he is someone who may not have his roster spot held for him just because Seattle does have three very talented players coming into the fold. I absolutely agree with you. Once Jaron Reed is available to Seattle, then he's absolutely going to have a roster spot. It remains to be seen what spot that might be because, again, the injury concerns. Generally speaking, I think that most teams are going to try to add a player at the same position in which they're taking a player away. So I think that some of the veterans on Seattle's defensive line, some of whom we've already mentioned, may be in danger of losing their position just because Jaron Reed is coming. I would agree with you as far as Phil Haynes, I think, has the easiest route to getting onto Seattle's active roster. At the same time, I really was impressed by Jamarco Jones. I know you were as well, Corbin. We talked about that during yesterday's show. I know you wrote the article on Seahawks on Maven. And I think that because that Jamarco Jones was as effective as he was at the right guard position, where I think that Phil Haynes fits in so very well, that does complicate some things that way. DeMarcus Christmas, to me, he's not quite as big as Al Woods, but that's the same type of a guy that he is. He's more of a run stuffer than that interior pass rusher. Even though he and Jaron Reed play the same position as far as defensive tackle, they're very different strengths. And so I think it's going to be fascinating to see what Seattle is able to do to hopefully keep all three of these players somehow under club control.
We don't typically delve too much into the intricacies of the PUP list, non-football injury list, injury reserve. I mean, we talk about those things, but not, we don't go into all the details, but I feel like it's worth going into that right now, because with Haynes and more so with DeMarcus Christmas, you got to wonder about, is there really a roster spot? Can you justify opening that roster spot for these two guys that didn't get to play in training camp or the preseason? They're rookies. They've never played an NFL game before. The guard position, you could maybe see it a little bit more for Haynes, but as far as options are concerned for the Seahawks, they can activate these players, which means they need to open up a roster spot. That's going to be complicated. They can keep Haynes and or Christmas on the PUP list up till week 12. There's another six-week window where they can be on the PUP list and they can return to practice at any point during that time. Once week 12 passes, those guys revert to injured reserve. They're on the PUP list for the rest of the season. You cannot activate them. So that would allow you to keep both of them in the fold beyond this season, but you wouldn't get to see either one of them play this year. And obviously during that 6 weeks, there could be injuries on the roster, and suddenly the necessity for either one of these players would go way up. The other option that they have, and this would be really risky, but I think it'd be a little bit easier to slip Christmas onto their practice squad than it would Phil Haynes. I don't think they were going to try to release him, but that is the other option that you have, is you could release a player if he's healthy and try to sneak him onto your practice squad. Middle of the season, sometimes you can slip good players on back onto the practice squad that way, but I think Phil Haynes would get picked up pretty quickly. Christmas, that's remaining to be seen. Certainly some tough decisions for them. You mentioned the defensive tackle spot, that maybe Seattle would just cut one guy there and bring Jaron Reed onto the roster. I think that the receiver position right now, Gary Jennings was almost cut 2 weeks ago, and they've got seven receivers on their roster currently, so they've got a surplus at that position. I feel like he is probably going to be the odd man out here this time. Last time he got lucky and Brian Monet ended up being the guy that was cut at defensive tackle. I don't see that happening a second time with Jaron Reed coming back.
Well, I think it's a very good point. I would absolutely agree with you. I think the wide receiver is Seattle's deepest position in terms of numbers. And the fact that the young player, DK Metcalf, has established himself as Seattle's legitimate starter opposite Tyler Lockett, that has certainly helped. We've seen the flashes from David Moore. We've seen the flashes from Malik as well as Jaron Brown. So you have – the receivers are making some plays. The guys are getting on the field. So the fact that Jennings and John Arsua as well, neither one of them have been active to this point, or at least not been productive if active, then I think that does certainly create, that makes that the position to watch, I think, if Seattle is going to be making a couple of these players active. But if it is only one, I still think there's a possibility that they go with a defensive line. But again, wide receiver numbers, as you mentioned, Corbin, I think is something to very much keep an eye on.
It's also worth noting that Ed Dixon, the veteran tight end, can come off injured reserve week 8. And from what Pete Carroll sounded like yesterday, sounds like maybe he's making a little bit of progress than the last time we heard from Pete Carroll. So there's a chance that he could be available to come back. And that's another guy that you would have to juggle roster spots to get him on the 53-man. And so the Seahawks certainly have some tough decisions. Like you said, it's a good problem to have. You got a surplus of players. If a few injuries happen, these guys will be available for you. But certainly they've got some tough calls to make there. When we come back from a quick break, it's Throwback Tuesday. We're going to look at some former Seahawks who also excelled with the Browns. There's not a ton of them, but there are three or four guys that we're going to be taking a close look at in our weekly history lesson. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Before we move forward, let's talk about sex. Good sex. Remember the days when you were always ready to go and you could increase your performance and get that extra confidence in bed? Listen up. BlueChew.com. That's blue like the color blue. Blue Chew brings you the first chewable with the same FDA-approved active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, so you know they work. You can take them anytime, day or night, even on a full stomach. And since they're chewable, they work up to twice as fast as a pill, so you can be ready whenever an opportunity arises. Now, this isn't just for guys who can't perform. It's for any guy who wants extra function to enhance their performance in the bedroom. Blue Chew is prescribed online and ships straight to your door in a discreet package. So no in-person doctor's visit, no waiting in the pharmacy, and best of all, no more awkwardness. They're made in the USA, and since Blue Chew prepares and ships direct, they're cheaper than a pharmacy. Right now, we've got a special deal for our listeners. Visit BlueChew.com and get your first shipment free when you use our special promo code LOCKEDON. Just pay $5 shipping. Again, that's BlueChew.com. Promo code LOCKEDON to try for free. Blue Chew is the better, cheaper, faster choice, and we thank them for sponsoring the podcast. Welcome back, 12s. This is the Locked On Seahawks podcast. I'm your host, Corbin Smith. With me, as always, Rob Rang. Coming up in the third quarter, we're going to hand out our first quarter awards on the defensive side of the football. We did offense yesterday. But first, our favorite segment of the week. It's officially Throwback Tuesday. As we do each Tuesday, it's time for a bit of a history lesson, and we're going to look back at a few players who excelled with both the Seahawks and the Browns. Some of the weeks we've done this, Rob, we've had quite a few candidates, and we've actually had to narrow it down. This was a little bit tougher assignment. Not a lot of players who were dominant with both teams, but we did find a few quality candidates.
Yeah, Tom Arum would be the first one that would jump out to me. I mean, I just remember watching him at Iowa State, and you know, as I've said many times, that they just don't play much defense in the Big 12. And so when they do have someone who stands out defensively, then they really stand out. And Ruben, at 6'3", 320 pounds, 330 pounds, I mean, he definitely stood out. He's a classic run stuffer, but also gave you a little bit of a pass rush, and just he played Seahawk type of football. Frankly, played the Cleveland Brown type of football. Tough guy, passionate guy. Doesn't really matter what the score was. You knew you're going to get a terrific effort from him. As you said, Corbin, I mean, he was a guy that Seattle had shown some interest in possibly even in bringing him back. You know, just this past year. Kind of kicking the tires on him. Seattle ultimately wound up going with Al Woods, who we mentioned in the first quarter. Just a really good, physical, tough guy football player. But, you know, unfortunately, it's a different era in today's NFL. And so he's not a guy that I think that necessarily fits in quite so well for Seattle or Cleveland at this point, just because there are a lot of guys built like him, but productive, and especially productive. He had one monster year in Cleveland where he had 82 tackles. I mean, actually 2 years in a row, he had 82 tackles.
Yeah, I mean, he had a couple years. He was one of the best run-stuffing defensive tackles in the NFL.
No, exactly. The 1 year he had the 5 sacks, and so that's what was the kind of the surprising number for me. But just, you know, I've read some comparisons to Brandon Mebane and that type of a player, just a really good, reliable, tough guy that was just so durable, so consistent. That's one of the reasons that he wound up being a fan favorite just about everywhere he went.
338 tackles. He was with the Cleveland Browns for most of his career. He was drafted by Cleveland. So, like you said, he had a couple monster years with 70, 80 tackles. He had 1 year, randomly got 5 sacks. And I thought when Seattle had him for 2 years, he had 3 sacks in those 2 years with the Seahawks. He started all 32 regular season games for them. I thought he was one of the most underappreciated defenders on the team those 2 years. He kind of replaced Brandon Mebane. You mentioned him being a comparable player, but he's comparable size-wise and skill-wise, really fit into the Seahawks defense seamlessly, filling that same spot that Mebane was so good at for so many years, and had some really productive seasons for the Seahawks. The 2 years he played in Seattle, 75 tackles, I mentioned the 3 sacks. He had an interception against the Steelers. That was one of the greatest plays in those 2 years. Just, you love it when the big guy gets his hands on the football like that. So he got an interception for the Seahawks, played in their playoff games as well, had a really big game against the Vikings in that Ice Bowl playoff game. So He's a player that I really loved the couple years that he played in Seattle. He was a guy that, again, like Brandon Mebane, there were so many other stars on the defense that kind of got ignored a lot of the time. Maybe not a guy that you realized how important he was to the defense, but the 2 years he was in Seattle, extremely productive, and certainly the kind of player that they love to have along the defensive line. We've seen what Al Woods has done this year. Ruben had the same type of impact when he came in as a free agent.
Yeah, just a terrific player. And I mentioned the durability. I mean, started all 16 games, regular season games, as well as the playoffs, as you mentioned, was very effective in that Ice Bowl against Minnesota. I believe he had a fumble recovery in that game.
Yes, he did.
And so just a just, again, kind of the epitome of the tough guy Seahawks that made them such, you know, such fan favorites. And, but, you know, of course, he wasn't the only one. I mean, there were some other, you know, former Cleveland Browns that also wound up having some success. They started off with one Iowa State Cyclone in Ataba Rubin, and another who was drafted by Cleveland, wound up in Seattle. So this way, let's flip the switch and go with another Iowa State guy, and that'd be Seneca Wallace. There's a number of quarterbacks that wound up playing in both Seattle and Cleveland. I mean, you can go to the Brady Quinn, Charlie Fry route. There's a bunch of them. Trent Dilfer as well. But at the same time, Seneca Wallace, just like, again, we mentioned before, Iowa State, you know, he's kind of a dual-threat quarterback. And this, as I was saying before, Ruben kind of played in the wrong era. I think the Seneca Wallace played in the wrong era a little bit as well, just because I think that his game translates to what we're seeing in the field now. Just a dynamic dual-threat guy. Had a very strong arm, just didn't have quite the height, quite the accuracy. But a productive player in Seattle, and I think that he would have been a much better player in Cleveland if he had been surrounded by a little bit better offensive line and some pass catchers to support him a little bit more.
He replaced Matt Hasselbeck, who towards the end of his run in Seattle, the last 3 or 4 years he was there, had a lot of problems staying healthy. Durability started to become a problem for Hasselbeck. So Seneca Wallace was the young quarterback, like you said, out of Iowa State, that had a totally different game than Matt Hasselbeck. The ability to scramble. He had a huge reception in the 2005 NFC Championship game against the Panthers, playing at wide receiver. I mean, those are things that Matt Hasselbeck was not going to be doing. So these were two totally different players. But Seneca Wallace was a guy that, for a brief spell, I actually envisioned this guy might be the next franchise quarterback for the Seahawks, because I started to see the game making changes in the NFL. You started to see more room for guys like this. And he had over 3,500 passing yards, 24 touchdowns, just 14 interceptions, earned a fair number of starts because Hasselbeck had some injury issues. So I thought he was a fairly decent reserve guy that could come in and win games for you. Unfortunately, the Seahawks started to go into a little bit of a tailspin towards the end of the 2000s. So he wasn't playing with quite as talented of a team, a lot of older players as well, and started to see him bottom out a little bit in the NFC West. But certainly a guy that had some physical ability, and I agree with you. If he's playing today, if he's coming out of Iowa State now, I think he has a much better chance to be a successful starting quarterback in the NFL. As for the Browns, like you mentioned, no talent around him whatsoever. Still managed to throw 6 touchdowns, over 1,200 passing yards, just 4 picks. So there were some glimpses, but didn't play well enough for them to justify keeping him around. And he had been around for a while. He was a journeyman quarterback at that time. It's not, he wasn't a 23, 24-year-old guy anymore that you could really develop. He was past his prime at that point. So the Browns continued their quarterback carousel that has lasted for a long period of time. And they're hoping now the guy they have in Baker Mayfield can be the one that has officially stopped that carousel.
Yeah, that's the hope. And I'm very curious to see how Baker Mayfield bounces back at home after an ugly performance against a very jacked up San Francisco 49ers defense on Monday night. But, you know, one last player I think that we have to mention, it would be Joe Giravicius. He was just such a fan favorite here in Seattle, even though he only played the 1 year. And he was a productive player for Cleveland as well, even though, again, they didn't have, nearly the quarterback talent that some other franchises up there have been blessed with. But just, a very good quality player and a guy that, you know, kind of surprised people a little bit. I mean, let's face it, there's not a lot of receivers out there that are running more in the 4.5s and the 4.6s like Giravicius did that were able to be very successful in the NFL. And yet Giravicius, because of his size, because of his moxie as a route runner and just those terrific hands, was a very productive player just about everywhere he went.
If you're looking at players that had one season in Seattle and had a ton of success, I mean, there's obviously some other ones we can throw out there. There are one-year wonders all over the place. Thomas Rawls would be on this list. But Joe Giravicius has got to be one of the top five there, because the one season he played in Seattle, 2005, 55 catches, 694 yards, 10 touchdowns. So maybe the yardage isn't overly impressive, but he scored 10 touchdowns for Seattle, and they ended up going to the Super Bowl that season in the playoffs. 7 catches, 130 yards. And so he played a big role in helping the Seahawks get to the big game. Unfortunately, couldn't get the win against the Steelers, but had a really great season with the Seahawks. And a lot of people were hoping that he was going to be re-signed. Did not happen, though. Ended up signing with the Cleveland Browns. last two seasons that he played in the NFL, 2006 and 2007, 90 receptions, over 1,100 yards, 6 touchdowns. So his production tapered off a little bit when he was 32, 33 years old, but he was still pretty productive, again playing for a team that didn't have the quarterback talent that a lot of the other teams in the NFL do. But Jurevicius had a really good season in Seattle, and he is certainly a player that when I look back at that 2005 team, he was one of the more underappreciated players when you look at really having an impact on helping that passing game and helping that football team win 13 games in the regular season and make the Super Bowl. Make a memory that lasts a lifetime and let the Vivid Seats app help you get to your favorite live event. Enter promo code KICKOFF at checkout to receive a discount of up to $100. When we come back for the third quarter, yesterday we handed out our first quarter awards on the offensive side of the football. We're going to swing to the defensive side and hand out some first quarter hardware. Don't go away. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. If you found $100 on the street, would you pick it up or keep walking? Of course you take the money. So why do you keep picking winners and not betting on them? That's why I go to MyBookie. It's fast, it's easy, and they pay when you win. Let's face it. Where you're betting is just as important as who you're betting on. I wouldn't be telling you guys to bet with them if they weren't the best. Do the smart thing. If you're going to bet this football season, bet with MyBookie. Did you know you could bet on games after kickoff? If by the second half it looks like your bet is going to lose, you can always just take the other side. If you're the kind of guy that likes to bet a little and win a lot, try a parlay. If all your picks come through, you'll multiply your winnings, and no matter what you bet or how you bet, the NFL season is the best time of year. Join now and MyBookie will double your first deposit. Use promo code LOCKEDON to activate the offer. That's promo code LOCKEDON. Visit MyBookie.ag today. You play, you win, you get paid. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. I'm Corbin Smith alongside my co-host Rob Rang. Again, it's hard to believe we are officially to week 6. Yesterday, we started handing out our first quarter awards. Now that we're 5 games into the season, we were looking at the offensive side of the football, looking at most improved player, biggest surprise, biggest play. Now, Rob, you and I are going to do the same thing on the defensive side of the football. The only big difference from yesterday, Russell Wilson obviously does not play defense, so we can actually hand out a defensive MVP, or we can call it the defensive player of the first quarter if you'd like. But looking at this defense, who do you think has been the MVP for the Seahawks defense through 5 games?
Well, for me, Corbin, it's just almost as easy on the defensive side as on the offensive side, just because the quarterback on both sides of the ball, in this case, Bobby Wagner, all pro. I think that he has to be the defensive MVP. There's, you know, it's too easy. It's taking, you know, the low hanging fruit. But if Bobby Wagner has an average game, then, you know, I mean, some people will write up in the sky just because we're so used to absolute excellence from number 54. So to me, he is the defensive MVP. There are statistics out there that you might be able to use to talk about other players. And I certainly think that this has been more of a team effort on the defensive side of the ball this year than in the past. But again, defensive MVP, player of the year for the defense, I think has to start with number 54.
There are a couple other players that I briefly considered, and then I realized you're not giving the MVP to Bobby Wagner. What is wrong with you? Is your brain not functioning? And so Bobby Wagner has to be the defensive MVP. And what's funny is there have been people sending me messages like, what is wrong with Bobby Wagner? Like, that's how dominant he is, that he's been kind of quiet. But then when you look statistically, the dude's averaging 10 tackles a game. It's not like he's fallen off the face of the earth. He forced a fumble last week. I know Clowney says he's the one that punched it out, but from what I could see, it looked like Wagner was the one that punched it out. Maybe both of them were involved in it. But Wagner has still been, you know, causing plenty of chaos, still a player that is one of the most dominant linebackers in the NFL, and he is the clear-cut leader of this defense. So it's just like Russell Wilson, like you said, the other side. It's pretty much a shoe-in who the defensive MVP is for this team. There are plenty of other guys that have had really good seasons so far, but it has to be Bobby Wagner. Now let's go to the defensive line. Clearly a bunch of new guys on this defensive line still trying to figure things out. Who would be your defensive lineman of the first quarter?
You know, this is a difficult one for me. I'm going to go with Jadeveon Clowney, and I'll explain why. I think that kind of like what I was arguing before or yesterday, I mentioned Tyler Lockett as far as being, the player other than Russell Wilson, who really has been the difference maker for the Seahawks on offense. I think just Jadeveon Clowney's presence, just what a phenomenal athlete that he is. I think that's one of the biggest reasons why we have to mention him. In terms of statistics, the aforementioned Al Woods is actually leads the Seahawks defensive line in just pure tackles. And as you said before, Corbin, I mean, he's been very consistent and productive in making a big play in just about every game. But for me, it is Clowney, and the most exciting thing about it is I don't think he's even scratched the surface of what he's about to do this season for the Seahawks.
I think when it's all said and done, Clowney is going to be the defensive lineman of the year for this football team, but I cannot pick him for this category, and I'm not picking Al Woods either. I'm going to go with Quentin Jefferson. I think Quentin Jefferson might be the second most valuable player on this defense in the first five games. He's got two sacks. He's got seven quarterback hits. So you don't have Jaron Reed in the lineup. That means Quentin Jefferson has to reduce inside more, and he has looked much better and much more comfortable doing that this season than he even did last year when he had 15 quarterback hits. I mean, he had some really surprising numbers last year, but I feel like he has just been a force to reckon with these first five games, and has really helped offset the fact that Clowney was trying to get his feet under him in a new system. Ziggy Ansah has only played three games. LJ Collier has only played in a couple, and he's still trying to play catch-up after missing the entire preseason. But the one constant has been Quentin Jefferson, who has consistently been finding his way into the backfield and smacking quarterbacks. So I have to go with Jefferson for this. To me, he has had a monster first five games, and I'm sure Pete Carroll would back that up based on what he said yesterday. This is a guy that's really figuring his game out, and that's going to make this defensive line even scarier when all the other parts are working to full capacity. Now let's talk most improved on the defensive side of the football. This might have been the toughest one for me. I actually had five different players that I started with and then kind of whittled it down. Who would be your pick if you're looking at all three levels of the defense? Who is the most improved defender on the Seahawks team in the first quarter?
Well, you stole the words out of my mouth there before with Quentin Jefferson, because that's the guy I was definitely going to mention was the most improved. But, you know, looking at it, I mean, if I was to focus in on a different position, then I have to say Trey Flowers. I mean, I think that the Trey Flowers was as consistent as he was a year ago. But I'm one of those skeptics. It's like, all right, you did it for 1 year. No one knew your name. Let's see you do it again. And I know that he's given up a lot of catches. He's got a lot of tackles after giving up those catches because with those long arms, he's able to kind of lasso ball carriers down to the ground. I think you can make an argument that Shaquille Griffin on the other side is that guy, but I was expecting that, frankly. When he dropped all that weight, I knew what a dynamic athlete he was at UCF. When you have a player like Trey Flowers who was asked to make that transition from safety at Oklahoma State, again, talking about Big 12 and the lack of defense, to be able to come into the NFL, make that transition to cornerback, and be a stud as a rookie, and then so far has been having a very solid season in year two, to me, he's another player who has just improved his game because it's not just the new factor anymore. He's showing his technique. He's showing his toughness. Again, I think that the future is very, very bright for Trey Flowers with Seattle.
I actually had Shaquille Griffin originally as my selection for this because he has been so good these first five games, but I agree with you. We were talking about this before the season. I think you and I both anticipated there was going to be a really big leap for him, so I'm not surprised that we're seeing a different-looking Shaquille Griffin out there. What I am surprised about is what we've seen from Rasheem Green to this point. He has really impressed me, and we're seeing that the Seahawks are rewarding him for what he's done. He's playing a lot more snaps on that defensive line now, and this is a kid that is still really, really young, and so he's got a lot of time to still really figure things out, but you're starting to see that he's, you know, maybe the gears are working a little bit this year. His burst off the line looks better. He's got two sacks already. That sack he had against Kyler Murray 2 weekends ago was one of the best plays that I've seen this year. The ability to go after that really mobile quarterback, break down, not fall for the move that he was trying to pull on him, and then get him to the turf was a phenomenal play by him. Still, to me, a guy that has a really high ceiling that he is not close to approaching yet, but coming out of the preseason, I was starting to wonder, are they going to get much out of him? Because I wasn't impressed with how he played in exhibition play, but he has made some big plays in almost every game so far this year, and he's getting more confident. The Seahawks are getting more trust in him, and that's why he's getting more snaps now. Even with Clowney and Ansah both being there, he is still playing a lot of snaps every week, and I expect that to continue as long as he continues to produce and improve.
Yeah, me too. I've I was very high on Rashim Green coming out of USC. I kind of argued that, hey, you have to temper your enthusiasm with this guy before Seattle even drafted him. And then going to a team like the Seahawks, who are not scared to play young players, I thought, wow, for some guys, if you put them onto the field too early, like what the Washington Redskins are kind of debating right now, if they want to put their quarterback, Dwayne Haskins, out there and follow what the Giants did with Daniel Jones, and et cetera, that you can stunt a player's growth. And I was a little worried about that with Rashim Green, but you're right. You're starting to see him basically grow from kind of being a college young man to an NFL real man. And I think that we're seeing that burst. We're seeing the strength. We're seeing it all kind of come together for him. So I'm excited about him. The one other thing I've mentioned as far as the biggest surprise of the first quarter for me is not any one individual player, but just how stubborn and effective that Seattle's base defense with those three linebackers has been, despite going up against so many different spread offenses. I think that that's been fascinating and just so counter to what the rest of the NFL is doing. To me, it's just yet another testament to the brilliance that is Pete Carroll, and is especially on the defensive side of the ball.
I think my biggest surprise for the first quarter has to be the lack of contributions from LJ Collier and Marquise Blair. The top two draft picks the Seahawks had back in April, neither one of them playing significant snaps on defense. In fact, both of them have been healthy scratches twice in the last 3 weeks. So neither one of these guys, they're not even dressing up to play. And so if you would have told me that before week one, obviously they're rookies, and we see this happen in Seattle fairly often, that high draft picks, it takes a little time for them to get into the lineup. But I really thought, especially with Marquise Blair, that he was going to have an opportunity to really make an impact this season. And he still may very well do that. After the midseason, the light switch might go on and this kid may get an opportunity. That said, Tedrick Thompson had a pretty nice end to that game on Thursday night. Maybe now he gets the confidence that he's been lacking. I don't care what he told me after the game. That had to boost his confidence making that pick. Maybe that's what helps him turn the corner, and suddenly the opportunity is going to dry up, and now Blair, Thompson's in the lineup, he's going to be stuck playing special teams, or he's going to be on the sideline. So that's maybe been the biggest surprise to me, is what we haven't seen a little bit more out of those two guys to this point. Now, wrapping this up, what was your defensive play of the first quarter? What's the play that really jumped out to you?
Well, I'd have to mention Jadeveon Clowney, the tip interception, the returning for touchdown, all that kind of stuff. That's certainly the flashy play. But you just talked about the impact that Tedrick Thompson's interception had, not only on obviously contributing to Seattle's incredible win over the Rams, and how impactful that could be in terms of the divisional race, in terms of just confidence against the defending NFC champions. But then for Tedrick Thompson specifically, and being able to kind of live up to the confidence that that the Seattle's coaches have put into him. As you said, I mean, Blair was expected to kind of be pushing for this job. Lano Hill has been getting more and more reps at the safety position, possibly moving McDougald over the free safety. And so Tedrick Thompson to have that play on that stage, I think, is absolutely critical and one of the most important plays on offense, defense, or special teams for the Seahawks so far this season.
So I thought about going with a really flashy play for my play of the first quarter, maybe Thompson's pick, maybe Clowney with his 27-yard interception, but I'm going to go with another play from this Rams game. Al Woods, we've talked about him several times this show, the two-point conversion, stuffing Jared Goff. It looked like Goff had enough momentum there that he was going to be able to get the ball across the goal line, but Big Al Woods said, not happening. He pulled a Dikembe Mutombo and backed him out of there at the goal line. You are not going to get past the goal line. And that might not seem like a huge play, but it really was. The Seahawks won by 1 point. If Jared Goff's able to get another inch or two and get that football on the goal line, then the Rams win that football game even without the missed field goal at the end of the game. So that, to me, it really defines what the Seahawks have been doing this first part of the season. They have given up 80 rushing yards per game. They have the sixth best run defense in the NFL, and I know this is a passing league, but stopping the run is still very important. Just ask the Kansas City Chiefs about that in their loss to the Colts the other night. You got to be able to defend the run, And the Seahawks had some issues with that at times last year. Al Woods has come in, even without Jaren Reed, he has come in and he has given them that big stone wall in the middle that can just eat up blocks. And he also can make plays. He's not just a guy that's eating up blocks for others to make tackles. Like you said, he's got 14 tackles already this year. He's been really productive. He's on pace for over 40 tackles. He's going to have less snaps with Reed coming back most likely. So I don't think he's going to keep that pace, but he's been extremely productive. And that is the one play. He's made several others, a couple fourth down stops. He had a fumble. I still think it was an interception, but they called it a fumble recovery in week one. I want to see the big fella get a pick. But he's had a really good first five games coming back to the Seahawks. And the play that really jumped out to me, and it just tells you what this football team is all about. They'll bend, but they're not going to break. And getting that stuff on that two-point conversion was a big one. Make sure to follow me on Twitter at CorbinSmithNFL. You can follow Rob at Rob Rang. If you'd like to be a featured sponsor for our podcast, contact me, LockedSeahawks@gmail.com. Make sure to subscribe to our show, whether it's iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, whatever your preferred podcast platform is. Go to our website, LockedOnSeahawks.com. Coming up tomorrow, it is Crossover Wednesday. I'll be joining Locked On Browns to break down this upcoming Week 6 matchup in Cleveland. You won't want to miss it. Thanks for listening. Go Hawks.